Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Friday the 24th of October. If my math is right, about 11 days till the election, 87 days until George W. Bush leaves office, and the entire world breathes a collective sigh of relief. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. One of the commentators on CNN this morning wondering out loud if today is the day that the stock market really and truly crashes. It's only down a few hundred points at this point. We're going to get Ravi Batra on, the economist, professor of economics at Southern Methodist University, author of the book Greenspan's Fraud, and he will be speaking with us in the second hour of the program. And, of course, the third hour, anything goes. But our first hour, as always on Fridays, America's senator for America's Town Hall, Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont. Sanders.senate.gov is his website. And, Bernie, happy Friday to you.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Thank you. Alan Greenspan, Bernie, yesterday had this to say before Congress.
As I wrote last March, those of us who have looked to the self-interest of lending institutions to protect shareholders' equity, myself especially, are in a state of shocked disbelief.
Now apparently also earlier in the day at a local restaurant, he had said...
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Yeah. So, now you, Bernie, I've got audio here that my regular listeners have heard before, but probably a lot of our newer listeners, we've probably picked up 20 stations since the last time I played this about a year ago, or a half a year ago, where you just took Alan Greenspan apart and spread him all over the
table.
Let me
put that in a little bit of a context. When I was in the House, in the Congress, I was on the House Financial Services Committee, and every year by law, the chairman of the Fed has to come before that committee and make a report. Well, I think for 16 years, or almost that length of time, every time that Greenspan came before the committee, he and I would have it out. And what always amazed me is the kind of deference he received, not only from Republicans, but from a number of Democrats as well. He would come before the committee and say, oh, everything is going great. The economy is going great. Well, he and I had some differences of opinion. I'm not sure which tape you have, but I'd be interested in hearing it.
Yeah, here it is. And I know our listeners will find this fascinating.
Mr. Greenspan, I have long been concerned that you are way out of touch with the needs of the middle class and working families of our country, that you see your major function in your position as the need to represent the wealthy and large corporations. And I must tell you that your testimony today only confirms all of my suspicions. And I urge you, and I mean this seriously, because you're an honest person. I think you just don't know what's going on in the real world. And I would urge you, come with me to Vermont. Meet real people. The country clubs and the cocktail parties are not real America. The millionaires and billionaires are the exception to the rule. You talk about an improving economy while we have lost 3 million private sector jobs in the last 2 years. Long-term unemployment has more than tripled. Unemployment is higher than it has been since 1994. We have a $4 trillion national debt. 1.4 million Americans have lost their health insurance. Millions of seniors can't afford prescription drugs. Middle-class families can't send their kids to college because they don't have the money to do that. Bankruptcy cases have increased by a record-breaking 23%. Business investment is at its lowest level in more than 50 years. CEOs make more than 500 times of what their workers make. The middle class is shrinking. We have the greatest gap between the rich and the poor of any industrialized nation, and this is an economy that is improving. I hate to see what would happen if our economy was sinking. Now, today, you may not have known this. I suspect that you don't, but you have insulted tens of millions of American workers. You have defended over the years, among other things, the abolition of the minimum wage, one of your policies, and giving huge tax breaks to billionaires. But today you reached a new low, I think, by suggesting that manufacturing in America doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where the product is produced. We lost 2 million manufacturing jobs in the last 2 years alone, 10% of our workforce. Walmart has replaced General Motors as the major employer in America, paying people starvation wages rather than living wages, and all of that does not matter to you. Doesn't matter if it's produced in China, where workers are making 30 cents an hour, or produced in Vermont, where workers can make 20 bucks an hour. It doesn't matter. You have told the American people that you support a trade policy which is selling them out, only working for the CEOs who can take our plants to China, Mexico, and India. You insulted Mr. Castle. Mr. Castle, a few moments ago, a good Republican, told you that we're seeing not only the decline of manufacturing jobs, but white-collar information technology jobs. Forrester Research says that over the next 15 years, 3.3 million U.S. service industry jobs and 136 billion in wages will move offshore to India, Russia, China, and the Philippines. Does any of this matter to you? Do you give one whit of concern to the middle class and working families of this country? That's my question.
And we can play the first few seconds of his response if you'd like.
Congressman, we have the highest standard of living in the world.
No, we do not. You go to Scandinavia and you will find that people have a much higher standard of living in terms of education, health care, and decent paying jobs. Wrong, Mr. Greenspan.
May I answer your question?
You sure may.
Thank you. For a major industrial country, we have created the most advanced technologies, the highest standard of living.
And he goes on to blither in that.
Well, you know, really the emperor, I think it's not too hard to see that the emperor really didn't have any clothing.
And you can see how you were excoriating him for a $4 trillion debt. We now have an $11 trillion debt. I mean, I think this is a six-year-old piece of audio.
That's right. And everything, every point that I made there, you can magnify today because the situation is far, far worse in terms of the number of people who have lost their health insurance, the number of manufacturing jobs that have been lost. The national debt, of course, is much higher than it was then. The gap between the very rich and everybody else is higher today than it was then. But what Greenspan is about, and it's not necessary, you know, just to beat up on somebody who has acknowledged that he was wrong, but that whole philosophy, not just Greenspan, but Bob Rubin, this whole right-wing economic philosophy which says that government is bad, that really what we have got to do is allow the wealthy and the powerful and large corporations to do anything that they want, and somehow in a magical way, the invisible hand of the market is going to work and prosperity is going to reign on the entire country and the entire world. That's total, absolute, complete nonsense. And the point here today is not to be beating up on Greenspan. The point here is to understand that that philosophy has done extraordinary damage to the American people, and not just in the last month. Everyone's, oh, my goodness, the stock market has been crashing in the last month. We're moving into a recession. It has gone on a lot earlier than that. A year and a half ago, I put a hold on the nomination of Jim Nussle to be head director of the OMB. And I did that because I demanded that Bush have somebody at his side who actually understood the reality of what is taking place in this country. Well before the current economic crisis, you had the Bush administration just telling us how great the economy was, how robust it was, how magnificent it was. Meanwhile, median family income for the average working family had declined by over $2,000. Millions of people had lost their health insurance. Millions of people had lost their pensions. Working families were lining up at food shelves in order to get food to supplement their wages to feed their family. People couldn't afford to send their kids to college. So the point to be made here is not just within the last couple of months, but for the last 7 years and before that, we have seen a collapse of the middle class, an increase in poverty, and an obscene disparity between the very rich and everybody else.
And in my opinion, this all really began with the election of Ronald Reagan.
I think that's right. And the point is, do we develop an economic policy which works to protect protect the interests of ordinary people, or do we suddenly think that by allowing the wealthy and the powerful to do anything they want, giving them hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks, that suddenly that will work for all people? And I think what we see now is that has been a total disaster, and we need, the lesson to be learned is not just to be beating up on Alan Greenspan. The lesson to be learned is, where do we go from here? To my mind, what we have to understand on issue after issue is we need a revitalized political movement to demand the government develop policies that work for everybody. And I hope in the course of the program we'll talk about some of where I think we should be going.
Yeah, well, let's pick up on that briefly after we come back from the break, and then we can get to our callers, if that's okay with you, Brad.
That's great.
I'd love to hear your rant on that. 16 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie, every Friday, Senator Bernie Sanders. His website, sanders.senate.gov.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Fair and always slightly unbalanced, the Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to Teamster.org for more information. 21 minutes past the hour, the first hour of our Friday program here on October 23rd. Brunch with Bernie, as always, October 24th is today. Brunch with Bernie, Senator Bernie Sanders with us, sanders.senate.gov is website, our website if you want to drop into our live chat room, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com for our free live video stream. And Bernie, by the way, I sent that video that I just played on the air to Michael on your staff, if he wants to put it up on your website.
Oh, good, Sanders, thanks.
Because whenever I play that on the air, I get 50, 60 emails from people saying, can I have a copy of that? And so if you can get it up on your website, it might be a good thing.
All right, Tom, let me pick up a little bit more in terms of what Greenspan's philosophy is about. Because it's not just the deregulation of the financial institutions and his great shock that when you allow greedy, unscrupulous people whose whole goal in life is to make billions and billions of dollars, and that when you leave them alone, deregulate their activities, you know what? They go out and they're greedy and they're irresponsible and they're reckless and they do illegal activities in order to make billions and billions of dollars. Isn't that just shocking?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just amazed.
Never would have occurred to me.
Yeah. You know, but it goes well beyond the immediate banking crisis that we have and the lack of credit. It goes to prescription drugs, where you just saw a few years ago in Medicare Part D, Republicans put into law a prohibition of the government negotiating with drug companies to regulate the price of drugs that Medicare purchases. It goes to John McCain's plan today for health insurance. What he wants to do is tax the health insurance benefits that workers receive and essentially drive them into an open market, so that each individual American will have the quote-unquote freedom and opportunity to negotiate with a large insurance company. And good luck to you when you have cancer and you have diabetes and you have pre-existing conditions. Good luck to you in your negotiations to see what you will pay for health insurance. But that's what that deregulation is about. Deregulation and this right-wing economic philosophy is about unfettered free trade. And what it says to an average American worker, what Greenspan believes, what George Bush believes, what McCain believes — McCain is a major free trader — you are going to have the freedom, lucky you, to compete against workers in China who make 50 cents an hour and can't form a union. And that's freedom. That's your freedom. Isn't that good? Yeah. You don't want the government involved in protecting your jobs. That's evil protection.
And this is the position that the Republican Norm Coleman in Minnesota, the Republican Gordon Smith here in Oregon, Republicans all across the country, and a few Democrats. I mean, we have to acknowledge that, a few of the conservative Democrats. But by and large, this is the official position of the Republican Party.
Absolutely. And McCain, this is one area. You know, I think McCain has run a horrendous campaign and a dishonest campaign and a despicable campaign in many respects for his absolute awful attacks on Obama. But on this issue, I must say, he has been honest about it. He is an unfettered free trader. And if you want to see a situation where American workers are going to be forced to compete against people in Colombia, China, people who make pennies an hour, That's their philosophy. But that's, again, this right-wing ideology, anti-unionism, because, you know, we don't want, according to McCain, according to Bush, according to Greenspan, the unions just get in the way of the flexibility that large employers should be able to have. The idea that workers can come together and negotiate a contract, just an awful, awful idea. And obviously, we don't want to be burdened by Social Security, the government program. We want everybody to be investing in the stock market. Wouldn't we all be so good off? That's why we want to privatize Social Security, and we want to privatize Medicare, and we want to contract out and privatize many government services within the Pentagon and every other area of our lives, because government is just a terrible thing. And we really trust these large multinational corporations to do the right thing for the American people. So my point here is what Greenspan's right-wing ideology, which has had so much influence over governmental policy for the last, you know, since Reagan, is that we leave the powerful and wealthy special interest alone to do anything they want, and miraculously it's going to help everybody. Well, that is an absurd philosophy. It hasn't worked. It never has worked. And what we need to do is come together to figure out how we can work together through governmental policy to protect the interests of the middle class and working people. That means a national health care program such as every other major country in the world has. It means making it easier for workers to join unions so they can collectively negotiate contracts. It means using government policy to regulate financial institutions so that they cannot, as currently exist, be in a position where some $50 trillion in credit default swaps are floating around the universe right now. Nobody knows who owns them. Nobody knows what impact that is having on the financial market. Totally insane. So there's a lot to be talked about, but I think we are at a crossroads in terms of public policy. I think the Greenspan, Bush, McCain philosophy has failed. We need to move in a new direction.
Yeah, and we need a political movement nationwide to make that.
We sure do, because the opposition, if you think that these guys with the big money are now going to give up without a fight, you are sorely, sorely mistaken.
Yeah, no, they're just getting us to give them $700 billion so they can stick as much of the china and the silverware in their pants as they run out of a White House.
That's right.
Oh, man. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. We'll be picking up your calls on the other side of the break. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartmann.com, AirAmerica.com, Sanders.Senate.gov, 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program. Call 866-303-2270.
America back. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, our brunch with Bernie. Our Senator Bernie Sanders with us. And Bernie, pick up phone calls.
Let's do it.
Okay, Karen in Ithaca, New York. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, my goodness. What a privilege. Hi. I'm a housing economist, and I don't know how maybe I need to segue from what you're talking about with Greenspan. Excuse me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry about that. When Greenspan was talking about his irrational exuberance, or our irrational exuberance, one of the problems was we had too much credit buying houses. And one of the ways, it's not just the way people are speaking of that credit was being extended to people who couldn't afford it, but also the Federal Home Loan Banks, housing finance agencies were allowing people to buy with 45% of their income and up. So those people are now in trouble. They've been putting stuff on their credit cards. The whole idea that you would remedy the current destabilized markets is by paying off mortgages is completely logical, except I want to add a twist that I think, Senator, you would recognize maybe from your own state of Vermont, which is where the taxpayer pays off the lost value. And I have details of this where the lender absorbs some of the loss and the home buyer does too. But where the taxpayer invests in paying off the lost value and paying off the mortgage, That value was put into a land trust for deed-restricted housing. Does this sound familiar?
Yeah, it does. I was just something we were talking about in my office yesterday, actually.
Oh, well, exactly. And this is the Deloitte Touche, the accounting firm, did a study for the city of Portland and found that this is the best investment in taxpayer money in the long term under previous circumstances. Never mind now. I've done a calculation, and I figure it costs about $650 billion. But it gets us someplace. So it sounds like this is familiar to you. And
when I was mayor of Burlington, Karen, we initiated the first municipal community land trust in the United States of America. And actually,
yes, you did.
And that concept, that organization, has just won an international award from the United Nations, I believe, for the work they're doing, which is spreading all over the world. So I am very familiar with the concept of community land trust.
Yes, I know. Yes.
And so it seems like this is a good...
Yeah.
Thank you very much for the call, and thanks for listening to WNYY. Rather than bailing out Goldman Sachs, apparently these executives are going to be taking out of the $700 billion, $70 billion of it is still...
Just talked about that this morning in my office, and that is absolutely an outrage. And we are going to, as soon as Congress reconvenes on November 17th for a lame duck session, this is an issue that we are going to be dealing with. The idea, I voted against this bailout, said it was a bad idea for a dozen reasons, but the idea that in the midst of this crisis caused by these particular people, that they should be giving huge bonuses in companies which have been bailed out by the taxpayers when the taxpayers themselves are losing jobs, seeing a decline in their standard of living, is obviously not acceptable, to say the least.
Obscene. Dave in Indiana, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, first I'd like to thank you for that statement you made. I was listening the day you made that, and I said, finally, somebody telling Greenspan, telling him off or whatever. And another thing I was wondering, I wonder if now with all this McCain, spreading the wealth around, if Obama should change some of his commercials and show Bush's, what you could call, if I pronounce it correctly, Duo Nibor economy, which is Robin Hood spilled backwards, which is, I heard the other day they said it was from a Democratic source, so where after his tax cuts to the wealthy, in the early 2000s, $600 billion went from the, middle and lower class all the way.
Absolutely. Dave, that's a very good point.
And then on top of that, I saw a thing in 2005, a statement that said, from the IRS said that the top 1% of Americans, those making over $365,000, collected 21% of the income, where the bottom 50%, only 12.8% of the income.
Dave, thank you very much for raising those issues. So what you're saying is, number one, what we have seen under the Bush-McCain-Alan Greenspan type of approach is, in fact, redistribution of wealth. The problem is it is going from the middle class and lower income families to the very, very wealthy, not even the top 1%, in most instances the top 0.1%. And there's an argument out there, in fact, that it's not just the 1% that earn more income than the bottom 50%, but the top 0.1%. So that's a very good point. And I think what we should be focusing on, and certainly the media does not, Congress very rarely does, is this issue of distribution of wealth and income. Because if you look at economics to a large degree, what it is about is who's winning and who's losing. And what we know under this Bush-McCain-Greenspan philosophy, the middle class is being decimated, and the people on top have never had it so good since the 1920s. So I think, Dave, you make a very important point, and that's just an issue we've got to continue focusing on.
Yeah. Kelvin in Hallandale, Florida?
Yes. Question. What is it possible? Why can't the government put into motion that at least a certain percentage of any American company that's here in the United States has to manufacture their products here in the United States? Because this will create jobs overnight. There's no jobs going to come out here with all these bailing out these big companies. They're not creating jobs. They're just
domestic content requirements like they have in many other countries.
I beg your pardon?
They're called domestic content requirements. A certain percentage, if you're going to sell something within the country, a certain percentage of it has to be made within the country.
Absolutely no manufacturer. And if they say, well, the companies would leave, fine. There's other companies would take their place.
Well, I think, Kelvin, what you are raising, what you're touching on, is a huge issue. And that is that we are not just dealing with a financial meltdown in terms of lack of credit and banks not being able to get loans. What we're also dealing is with an economic crisis, and it is not being talked about enough, but certainly in the midst of that economic crisis is the loss of millions of good-paying blue-collar jobs and white-collar jobs as well. Now, over the years, I've been looking at a number of approaches to demand that corporate America start reinvesting in this country and create good-paying jobs. So I think you've touched on one approach. There are a number of ideas out there. But what we have got to do is incentivize corporate America to start reinvesting in this country instead of literally giving those companies who are throwing American workers out on the street tax breaks under the guise that all of this unfettered free trade is somehow good for the American people. So we do need to focus on how we rebuild manufacturing in this country. I just cannot understand how anyone thinks our economy is going to be strong and secure if we're not producing what the American people need. And right now, what you're looking at, by the way, is the decimation of Detroit and other large manufacturing centers in this country. What I can tell you is that when Congress reconvenes on November 17th, I and others are going to be fighting for a major economic recovery package, which includes investing significant sums of money in rebuilding our infrastructure, in moving this country away from fossil fuels and our dependence on Mideast oil to energy efficiency and sustainable energy. I think we can create millions of jobs if we move in that direction. We have got to, you know, there was a piece in the paper the other day, Tom, which indicated that more kids are dropping out of high school now than did in the previous generation.
Yeah.
And here we're in desperate need of a skilled and educated workforce. We got to invest in early childcare. We got to invest to make sure that our kids go to college. We ought to move aggressively in the healthcare crisis to make sure that everybody at least has access to primary healthcare. So there are enormous numbers of investment. And the bottom line here is I think most Americans now perceive, if, and again, I voted against this, if we can spend $700 billion, an unbelievable sum of money, to bail out Wall Street, we certainly can spend an equal amount of money to protect the middle class and create the kind of jobs that we need in our country as we rebuild America for the 21st century.
Amen. Randy in Iowa, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello.
Hey, Randy.
Hi, how are you today? Love your program. Here's the question, and I'll put it to you, and then I'll listen on there. When he talks about distribution of wealth, that basically equals growth. And you have two types, sustainable and unsustainable. And here's the question. When you compare the social welfare economics of the 30 years post-World War II and that of the 30-year post-Reagan supply-side deregulation corporate welfare economics, which one was most successful in terms of sustainable growth? And I'll get off the air, and this is a union man in Iowa who appreciates you, Bernie. Thank you very much.
Well, Randy, I think thank you for that question, and it's an important question. And I think the answer is pretty clear, that from the end of World War II, 1945, to about 1973, what we saw in the United States was the kind of economic growth that primarily benefited the middle class. We saw a huge expansion of the middle class. We saw more people able to go to college, more people owning their homes, wages going up. We saw a decline in poverty. And you know what? During that period, the rich did okay, too. Mm-hmm. They became richer. But the gains, the economic gains, were spread across virtually all of society. And I think Randy's point is that since 73, by the way, which was the high point for the middle class in America, right, that since 73 to 2008, what we have seen is growing disparity. So you can have a lot of economic growth, but the economic growth, if it ends up in the hands of the few, doesn't mean much to the middle class whose standard of living is declining. So I think Randy's point is an important point. It means that you got to get beyond the jargon and look at the reality of how economics impacts ordinary people.
Yeah, and 73, that was the end of the Nixon era where he was promoting deregulation and internationalism.
Right.
And everybody bought into it. 45 minutes past the hour, Brunch with Bernie here.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman here with you, 9.5 minutes before the hour. Our Brunch with Bernie hour, Senator Bernie Sanders. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website. He's got a great newsletter. You can sign up for it there. Jan in Dallas, Texas, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Good morning. I appreciate your show. I appreciate Senator Sanders. I've got a couple things I'll talk about real quick, and then I have a question about how to talk to a Republican. First is, after 3 decades of voodoo economics, 6 years of George W. Bush as my governor, 8 years as president, I put up a sign in the front yard that says, "Welcome to Arbusto, USA." Second is...
Arbusto being the oil company that George W. Bush ran into the ground. Yeah.
Yes, because he's incompetent. Can't do a damn thing. Next one is, we just got our Air America station back here.
Yep.
It's 1360 on the dial.
Yep, 50,000 watts in Dallas, Texas, and we're proud to be on there live.
I put a sign in my back window of my car. It says 1360 AM, right side of the dial for the left side of your brain.
That's great. And if all of our listeners in Dallas would put a sign in the back window of their car telling people to tune to 1360 AM in Dallas, it would be great because it's a brand new station. They're just starting up. They need all the publicity they can get.
Okay, one more statement, then I want to ask a question. I did early voting today. This is the first time I've voted early. I've always voted on Election Day. And on Election Day down here, we have a paper ballot that gets optically scanned. On early voting, we have a touch screen. When I asked the poll worker for a receipt, he laughed and said, "It's not possible." When I asked and said, "How do I?" When I asked, "How do I know that my vote is who I voted for?" He laughed and said, "It's in the computer." So I have called the county elections, the Secretary of State, and my representative and voiced objections. I've got answers that say, "Well, that's just the way the system is." So I don't know if anybody, I don't know what your opinions are here now on early voting on touch screens, but I'm not real happy with this system in 2008.
Okay. Well, you've touched on a lot of issues. Congratulations, by the way, for the folks in the Dallas area for having access now to a progressive radio station. And I think, Tom, as you and I have talked about many times over the years, clearly this country is not going to move forward unless people are able to discuss ideas and concepts outside of the framework of the corporate media. So we need to make a major push for more progressive radio, progressive television, progressive websites, so that the American people can have a conversation that allows concepts to be dealt with that go beyond what NBC and CBS and ABC find acceptable. So congratulations to the people of Texas for moving forward with a progressive radio station. Jan, in terms of touchscreen computer voting, it is an issue I know we've also talked about for a number of years where many of us have deep concerns about that. There is a fear that come Election Day we are going to have around this country some problems out there. I hope that's not true. But I think we have got to take a hard look at how people are voting. I am amazed. Once the Canadians just had an election a month or so ago, they do it smoothly. They do it easily. The votes are published very quickly. I think they do it on paper ballots. So I would rather do it a little bit slower and do it right, do it without any controversy, making sure that people are 100% certain that their vote is counted, rather than go into some technologies which can be uncertain or monkeyed around with.
Amen. Scott in Jackson, Wyoming, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Tom, Bernie. I'm calling from the Blue Speck in Wyoming. I would just like Bernie to kind of reiterate his analogy of a poker game. And the one that I always use with people I talk to is the game of Monopoly. And the lesson we should all learn is that we all end up losing except one person,
right? Right.
Which is kind of the direction that our economy is going.
Well, Scott, that's a good analogy. I mean, I think the philosophical divide in this country is, on one hand, what most of us, and I think most Americans believe, do we work together to make sure that all of our people do well? And that means, how do we develop, for example, a national health care program that guarantees health care to all people? How do we create good-paying jobs in our country? How do we have a equitable distribution of wealth and income? How do we make sure that all of our kids have a good education? That's one way, the way that I look at it. I think most of the listeners, and in fact, most of the American people look at it. How do we do that? Not easy, but that's the goal. There is another way that says, hey, everybody is on their own. Don't worry about anybody. Don't be concerned about the elderly person who's living down the block. That's not your problem. The only thing that you should focus on is how you can manipulate the system to go out and make as much money as you can, make billions, and walk over the children who are out on the street. Ignore the workers who are unemployed. Forget about the people who have no health insurance. That's not your worry. You're in it only for yourself.
This is why Monopoly was invented in the 1930s, to teach people what happened.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. But I think both from an economic perspective, what's good for most people, plus from a human perspective, is that what we think human life is about? I mean, do we really want to be like these Wall Street crooks who the only thing they thought about is making billions and billions of dollars and not paying as little in taxes as they possibly could, moving offshore just for themselves and their families, not caring about the rest of the people in this country? Is that what we think the good life is about? Is that what is morality? Is that what family values are about? I don't think so. So, you know, I think Scott asked the right question, and that's the kind of discussion we need as Americans. Where do we want to go as a country? Are we in it together, or do we want to see a handful of people make out like bandits, and many of them are bandits, while everybody else sinks? That is exactly the debate we need to have, and I think the failure of Greenspan and McCain and Bush-type economics, the immorality of that approach is becoming clearer and clearer to the American people. I think that is certainly one of the issues of this election, by the way,
yeah,
which is why I think Obama is going to win.
Very well said. And from your lips to God's ears, Bernie, they knock a million people off the voting rolls in New York, 100,000 off the voting rolls in Colorado. A lot of us are getting very nervous out here. But hopefully truth and wisdom will prevail. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov. Thank you, Bernie.
Thank you, Tom.
Good talking with you. Robbie Bottrop next.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. It's Anything Goes Friday here. We're trying to track down Ravi Batra as we speak. Larry King, some interesting commentary. He had Michael Moore on last night. And apparently afterwards he does a little video segment for the web. And I thought it was really interesting. Now, let me just share with you a minute or so of this, because it's fascinating. This is Larry King talking to the camera, just himself answering questions from the blog.
And Larry, on the tired question of experience, why bother? Is it not possible that no amount of experience can prepare someone to be president? Very possible. In fact, sometimes the more experience, the worse it is. Lawrence in Minnesota. How does Barack Obama's platform and values today compare to that of Dwight Eisenhower? What are the commonalities? Well, I lived through the Eisenhower era. I'll have to think about it. Eisenhower was a moderate Republican running against the tide of his party. By the way, the conservatives were against Eisenhower at the time. He generally now is regarded as a very moderate president. Glenn in Tampa. Larry, are we witnessing the slow demise of the Republican Party? No, no party ever goes into demise in a two-party system. There are peaks and valleys, and sometimes they go through poor periods, but they never, never demise. And finally, Jay writes to Michael Moore, I'm a Republican. I used to hate you. And now I'm an Obama supporter. I kind of like you. Oh, what Obama can do, bringing us all together. Oh, Jay, how tender the thought about last night.
That's Larry King. I just thought that was great. Okay, this story, there's a Tawana Brawley story going on, in my humble opinion. Drudge has been hyperventilating about this woman in Pennsylvania, I believe it was, who went to an ATM. The guy stuck her up, you know, came up and robbed her. And then this is her story. And then after he took her money, he noticed that she had a McCain Palin bumper sticker on her car. And so he came back and carved a B in her face, presumably a B for Barack. That's her story, and she's sticking to it. Well, first of all, the B is backwards. It's the way that you would see, and this is the first thing I saw when I saw the picture on Drudge. I said, wait a minute, there's something wrong with that. First of all, it's too perfect. It was very carefully done. Secondly, it's backwards. It's the way you would do it if you did it in a mirror. If you're looking in a mirror and trying to draw a B on your face and you don't realize that mirrors reverse things, that's what you'd have. It's a mirror image of a B, not a B. And third, McCain and Palin both called this woman and you know, they're trying to turn this into a big deal. And I think it's going to be John McCain's Al Sharpton moment. The woman is now going to be taking a lie detector test. Even Michelle Malkin says something smells about this. She says, throughout my career, I've covered dozens of fake hate crimes, campus hate crime hoaxes, Muslim hate crime hoaxes, fake noose hangings, etc. Most were perpetrated by liberals, but there have been some shameful ones on our side of the aisle as well. And, you know, the bottom line, even Michelle Malkin, she refused medical treatment after reporting the incident to the police. Why on earth would she do that? What's wrong with the B? She says, this is how you do it if you were, you know, doing something in a mirror. So I think this is going to be John McCain's Tawana Brawley, and this might be the thing that finally brings down. And in fact, the police now want this woman to take a lie detector test. So pretty strange stuff. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. But the Obama campaign, dividing America to win at any cost, run the risk of leaving a divided nation to Obama. Not just run the risk. They've already done it. Leaving a divided nation to Obama, it doubles the work of the next president, frankly. Even if it were President McCain, it doubles the work of the next president. The Steve Schmidt, Karl Rove campaign that has been run is harming our country. It's not helping McCain either, by the way. I mean, it's stupid politics, but it's plain old flat out harming our country. Dr. Ravi Batra is with us, our own economics guru, professor of economics at SMU, international New York Times best-selling author of Greenspan's Fraud, and most recently The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. His website is Ravi, R-A-V-I, Batra, BATRA.com, and you can find his writings and his books over there. Ravi, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Tom.
Earlier in the day, we were watching Bloomberg from Hong Kong, and they were freaked out. This is a secondhand story, but I heard that there was a commentator. Louise said that she saw a commentator on CNN talking about this might be Black Friday, like Black Tuesday was in 29. Keep in mind that Black Tuesday in 29 followed a Black Thursday and Black Friday the preceding week, and then there'd been a Black Thursday, and then there'd been bounce on Friday, and then it fell again on Monday. It wasn't all of a sudden on one day. Do you think, I'm hearing two stories. One is that there's trillions of dollars out there in the hedge funds, or at least hundreds of billions, but perhaps thousands of billions, trillions of dollars in the hedge funds, and that they're having to liquidate their assets because people are pulling out of the hedge funds. And so they're liquidating gold and gold futures. They're liquidating oil and oil futures, and they're liquidating stock and stock futures, which is why we're seeing this weird anomaly of commodities falling at the same time stocks are falling. The other story that I hear is that we really and truly are sliding into another Great Depression. And in fact, there's just this remarkable story about how the What's it called? The dry dock. It's a measure of boats that are in the Balkans. I think it's the Balkan dry dock index or something like that. And it is worse than it has ever been. In other words, it indicates that there are all these ships that are being kept in harbor because the shippers or the people who have the consignments of freight, and this is virtually all raw materials, cannot get credit to pay for it, so they don't actually own it, so the ships can't leave. And so basically what's happening is raw materials around the world are freezing up because the economy really and truly is crashing into a Great Depression. And over the next 6, 8, 10, 12 months, we are going to see a 1933 scenario. Which of those two would you pick, or is it a synthesis of the two, or is it something different?
I think they're both right. Both of those positions are correct. The hedge funds make money in two ways. When the times are good, they go long on stocks. They buy them at very cheap prices. They look for some really good companies which are cheap and then buy them, and this way they make a lot of money. And when times are bad, they short the stocks. They sell stocks in the hope that stock prices fall, then they can buy it back. So hedge funds make money in this way.
Basically betting.
Particularly in the bad times, yeah, they short the stocks a lot.
Right.
But nowadays, you don't know what's happening. Someday the market falls 800 points, then the next day or a week later it rises 600 points, especially in the final hour, you don't know what happens. So the hedge funds are also losing a lot of money, and then many hedge funds had bet strongly on oil. And remember their theory was that there's all this oil demand coming from India and China, and that so oil can never fall. Whereas I was telling a different story that, no, it's a speculation in the oil market along with the monopoly element in the oil industry that are producing a rise in the price of oil, and this oil bubble can burst any time. The hedge funds believed their own theories, and now they are caught napping.
So now, a lot of people, it's the Baltic Dry Index, by the way, and the Baltic Dry Index fell 66% in the 3 months to September 30th, the largest quarterly drop since they began compiling numbers. This is the measure of commodity shipping rates, and the lowest in more than 6 years fell in London.
I don't think it's the lack of credit that's the problem for why those ships are not moving. It is the fact that the countries are becoming very uncertain whether they can sell all they're going to produce in the near future or not.
Right. So yeah. In fact, they note this from the Hellenic Shipping News: dry bulk shippers are going the way of the global economy, underwater. Among the shippers, dry ships and Excel marine carriers have been hit particularly hard. 13th straight day, the Baltic Dry Index, which measures dry bulk shipping rates on 40 routes across the world, tumbled.
Yeah, consumer demand is falling very sharply. After a look at the steel stocks, U.S. steel was selling for about $200 a month ago. Now it is at $35. How fast has their price fallen? Even though the profits from the previous quarter will still be pretty good, it is just that steel is the first industry that feels the pinch of a downturn. Autos are not selling, homes are not selling, we already know that.
Right, so refrigerators and stoves and other appliances.
So the bigger problem, I think, is the falling consumer demand.
Yeah.
That is causing these dry docks.
The question I'd like to ask you when we come back from the break, if you can stick around, sir?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay, the question I'd like to ask you is, you know, many people got out of the stock market, the traditional stock market, and instead bought stocks that reflected oil and gold companies, you know, but they got into the commodities via the stock market. Those have taken a tank, too. Is now the time to sell? 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
There is no suspense or mystery. The White House rewrites our history now. Heaven knows that anything goes.
It's Anything Goes Friday, but it looks like the thing that's going is the economy of the United States of America now that Alan Greenspan not only totally discredited, but also shocked.
I'm shocked, to find that gambling is going on in here.
Yes, Mr. Greenspan coming out yesterday and saying he is shocked that the free market didn't work the way he expected it would. Of course, Dr. Ravi Batra predicted that years ago, writing his book, Greenspan's Fraud, must-read book, and his new book, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. And, of course, we're in the midst of the political corruption and economic chaos phase. Ravi, Howard in Seattle has basically my question. Let Howard ask it again, and we'll get back to it. Howard, you're on the air with Ravi Batra.
Hey, thanks, Tom, and thanks, Ravi. God, it's an honor to talk to both of you. Recently, my dad passed away. And what he did was he had some stocks and bonds, stocks and CDs in his account. And what I'm concerned about is, you know, people are saying, you know, keep your money in stocks, keep it, you know, let it go through all this because it's cyclical. But I don't know that that the history is going to pertain to what's going on right now. And my question is, you know, should we keep our money in the stock market or get out?
Good question, Howard. Ravi, if somebody, my understanding, my recollection is, you know, going back and reading the history of the New York Times or through the New York Times of the history of the Great Depression, is that if somebody bought stock at the bottom of the market in 31, 32, they didn't see equal value until World War II.
Yeah, that's the problem with this kind of line of thinking that things are going to make a comeback. The stock market has already fallen. The question is, will it fall more or not? If I were to remember a few months ago, I said on your show, this is a disaster in the making.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also see now it's a disaster in the making.
Yeah, several months ago you told people to get into cash,
yeah,
as I recall.
And so I would just, at the least, I would cut back maybe if you have too much, maybe cut it into 25%, but half, you know, so that you don't lose everything, and if the markets do make a comeback, then you do recover somewhat.
Yeah.
So, but I don't think the markets are going to recover anytime soon.
And that would be the commodity markets, oil and gold, as well as the traditional stock markets.
For the commodity markets, what's happening is this: as you said earlier, the hedge funds are selling a lot. They were great buyers of gold and silver and oil. After the hedge funds have liquidated their positions, then I think gold could make a comeback. Oil, I think, will depend upon next year Obama's move about Iraq. If he starts pulling out troops very quickly, oil could sharply rise, maybe not next year, maybe a year later, because there will be tremendous Middle East fighting after he pulls out. It's not that, I'm not saying that he shouldn't pull out. There is no reason for us to keep our troops over there and die for the sake of others. But this is the reality.
Yeah.
So if he pulls out, I think oil will make a comeback, and so will gold. But I think right now it's a great time. And again, I'm saying it because I am going to do it myself. Mm-hmm. I will not tell you what I'm recommending, but I will tell you what I'm going to do myself today or next week. The gold price shares have fallen sharply.
Yes.
Like American Barrick Gold or Barrick Gold is selling at less than $20. It has an option, 1 month option premium of $2.50 or $2.35. That's a 12% return just for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll buy the share, 100 shares, sell that one option at that price.
Mm-hmm.
And if the price of gold goes up, my minimum return is 12-13%. If the price falls, then a month later I will sell another option on this. So I think this is a good strategy as far as getting into gold is concerned.
Yeah.
Buy gold shares at very low prices and sell at this time. Monthly option has a tremendous premium, and that's what I'm going to do myself.
Right. So you're basically doing what a hedge fund does. You're covering your bet.
I'm covering my bet. That's right. And if oil goes up sharp, I mean gold goes up sharply, I will perhaps regret that my return is only 12-13%.
Yeah.
But I don't think 12-13% in 1 month is bad.
No. I think most, you know, in these days when treasuries are returning, what, 0.2% or something? I mean,
right.
It's,
and then I could also lose further because as stock market falls, gold falls, this gold share could fall even more. But as I said, I'm hedging it for 1 month, and after the month, I can sell another option for a month.
Yeah.
This way I can protect myself.
Yeah, it sounds reasonable. You know, it's a level of investor sophistication that and you know, time and effort that frankly is beyond me, and I think probably many people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This is not my financial advice. This is what
right.
I plan to do myself.
Yeah, and but for the average person who doesn't have the ability or the option to do that,
yeah.
Just you know, reduce your what you would do. And again, we're not making recommendations or offering financial advice, but what you would do is reduce dramatically your holdings in stocks or even in commodity stocks down to 10, 20, 30%
of your
portfolio.
I will reduce the commodity stocks, and if I want to get into gold, I will not buy gold. You know, gold has fallen to 700 now.
Yeah.
I will not buy gold, but I will buy some gold shares so I can sell options on them.
Interesting. Can you stick around and take some questions?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Dr. Ravi Batra with us. His books, Greenspan's Fraud, a particularly prescient book, and Brilliant, and The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos. His website, Ravi Batra, RAVIBATRA.com, professor of economics at SMU. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Like me and you, I have a silly notion if we want them to be friends, they prefer that we don't torture them. But I'm a liberal.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
Unforgivable.
I'm a liberal.
Term.
He's a liberal.
I'm a liberal.
He's your typical liberal.
Thirty-four minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Dr. Ravi Batra with us. Oh, this news just coming across the wires, offering a sharp contrast to the general gloom on Wall Street today. Retail stocks soared on the news that Governor Sarah Palin plans to buy a new outfit for election night. Major retailers had been plummeting all day, but staged a stunning comeback when Governor Palin told a reporter in Ohio, quote, election night is just 11 days away and I have nothing to wear, end quote. Governor Palin said the new dress for election night could cost as much as $20,000, quote, and that's before you accessorize. Major department stores such as Neiman Marcus and Saks Fifth Avenue rebounded dramatically on the news of Governor Palin's plans, with some industry analysts predicting that Governor Palin's shopping could bail out the entire retail sector in the fourth quarter. Tracy Kloogian of Morgan Stanley said, right now, the only part of the economy that's strong is Sarah Palin's shopping. She's a one-woman stimulus package. With thanks to Andy Borowitz, of course, BorowitzReport.com. It is serious stuff, though, Robbie. Shall we take some phone calls here and see what our...
I wanted to say one thing before we take the phone calls. I feel so sad that all this is happening, even after I warned people again and again that this is coming. But
yeah.
Now I have one request from your audience. Please call your senator and congressman. Tell them that there is a solution. There is a way out. It's not creating more debt in a debt-strapped America. There are other ways to fix this problem. And I have written about them in my books, as you know, Tom, very well.
Yes, and in fact, I would recommend that every member of Congress either go out and buy or somebody buy and send it to them a copy of your book, The New Golden Age.
At least Greenspan's Fraud they should send, because Greenspan has admitted now that he doesn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Mr. Greenspan yesterday.
Those of us who have looked to the self-interest of lending institutions to protect shareholders' equity, myself especially, are in a state of shocked disbelief.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, do you think he really is in a state of shock disbelief? Was he really that much of a true believer?
No, he. I don't think he's in a state of shock. He is walking handsomely, smilingly all the way to the bank.
I mean, he just got caught with his hands in the cookie jar.
Yeah, exactly. He's a hypocrite.
Yeah. It's a tragic thing when you think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, Frank in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Frank, you're on the air with Dr. Ravi Batra.
Hi, good morning. I have a quick question for you here. I've got a father-in-law who's a very bright individual, very educated, master's degree, he's an engineer, he's a Republican, and I continue to point out how bad our deficit and our debt combined are, and he continues to come back that we have so much money in our gold reserves, and I never have a good comeback on that. I don't know how the gold reserves are tied into our financial system. That's it.
So we've got some money left in Fort Knox.
Fort Knox has some gold, and at $700 per ounce, it perhaps has $400 or $500 billion value for it. But that's nothing in comparison to all the bailouts we are going to do.
It used to be that the amount of gold in Fort Knox was supposed to be balanced to GDP. Was it not?
Well, not only that, who wants to get rid of the gold at these times, in these risky times? If there are demands on our gold, we will not part with it. Nobody does that.
Yeah. Well said. Lynn in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Lynn. Lynn?
Hey, you are
on the air.
Professor Batra, it's really a pleasure to talk to you. I wanted to ask a question, and before I ask it, just quickly, my children all live in Iceland, and I lived there for 30 years. I just recently moved back to the States. A few days before the collapse of those banks, my daughter took a $63,000 inheritance and changed it into Icelandic kroner, and no one said anything to her. There wasn't even a whisper that anything was going wrong. And then suddenly everyone wakes up that very next Monday, and everything is frozen in the credit channels. They seem to tell me that it has to do with England and Gordon Brown, and that the National Bank's assets were seized under a terrorism act. And they're really angry in Iceland. And I just wanted to ask you, could you tell me something that would – I don't understand all of this.
Well, it's easy to blame others, you know. Iceland banks were doing what many banks in the United States and elsewhere have done. They were buying all these risky assets based on mortgage-backed securities, and for a time, prosperity was strong, money was coming into Iceland, and everybody was enjoying it. But suddenly then these securities turned out to be too risky, and then the banks started to fall, and then they blame on others. I don't think Britain would seize their assets without any cause.
Let me add to this, Ravi. There's a Toby Sanger wrote a great piece that you can find over at alternet.org about this. In 1984, Milton Friedman himself went to Iceland and engaged in a lively televised debate with leading socialists about his economic policies. This was it made so much sense to the Icelanders what Milton Friedman had to say that an entire generation of young conservatives was birthed out of that speech, that debate that Milton Friedman had and a number of speeches that he gave around the country. Keep in mind, this is a country of 300,000 people, so it doesn't take much to tell a message to everybody. And they created a party in 1991 called the Independence Party. And if you want to look who to blame, talk to Prime Minister David Oddsson right now, who's still with that party. That party has been control of Iceland since the early 90s. And what did they do? They cut corporate taxes from 50% down to 18%. They privatized and deregulated most of the major sectors of the government. They gave the central bank complete independence. They dropped all tariffs and went to a total free trade system. They dropped all controls on the value of the currency and went to a total free exchange rate system. It was total shock therapy. It was total Friedman economics, Friedrich von Hayek. And unique among the Scandinavian countries, all the other Scandinavian countries have kept with democratic socialism. Iceland went full bore. They went farther than Reagan did in the direction Reagan wanted to go. At least the Democrats in the United States restrained Reagan. Iceland did the full free market, full Monty. And now they're $60 billion in debt. because they believed this Reaganomics thing that debt doesn't matter. You can have good times. And so you got a country of 300,000 people that is $60 billion in debt because they cut taxes. They had no revenue for 20 years.
Yeah, see, most of the economists, if not all of them, give us partial truths. And those partial truths are plausible. If they told us lies, that would be great because people could see through those lies. But they give you partial truth and that truth is kind of convincing and then people follow them. The funny part is the real market, which really matters, where production occurs, where demand occurs, is a labor market. And the economists don't even want to touch it because they don't get paid by laborers. That's the trouble. They tell you partial truth and then they destroy the system in the end.
That's an incredible indictment of your profession.
I'm sorry, that's the way it is. Milton Friedman was a Nobel Prize winner after all, you know?
Yeah. Well, they invented, you know, it's actually the Bank of Sweden's prize in memory of Alfred Nobel, and they invented it so that they could give it to Friedman.
Right. That's the crazy part. The guy did not know economics. He's giving partial truths, and so that convinces people, and they follow him, and now they're facing a catastrophe.
It's all the ideology, and so are we, because we followed him to a large extent. Brett in Columbus, Ohio, you're on the air with Ravi Batra.
Good afternoon. I'm from Columbus. I have a question that it's kind of different. I'm just trying to speak from the part of the 47 without health care. I'm one of those. I also don't have any savings, have nothing in the stock market. I live paycheck to paycheck. With this global recession, what kind of susceptibilities do people in my position have while we go through these woes? And then second question, and I'll take my answer off the air, is are there any legal culpabilities of these yahoos that started this toxic mortgage asset? You know, that's really what started all this, did it not? And thank you very much.
Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, unfortunately, the answer to the first question is things are going to be really bad. You hold on to your job, and if possible, even get a part-time job right now when it's available. Save money as much as you can. Really bad times are coming up. Economic chaos is coming up. And the other people, will they be held responsible? Yeah, in the end, they will be held responsible. Not right now. Right now, we don't have that kind of situation. But I think in the end, they will have to pay.
Yeah, well, Ronald Reagan is not going to be held to account.
That's right.
Perhaps the folks at Goldman Sachs, I don't know, we'll see. I find it amazing, and we've got to take a break here in 20 seconds, and then we'll pick up some more calls on the other side of it. But I find it just amazing, Ravi, that this news report day before yesterday, that of the $700 billion we're giving to these banks, the Golden Nine in particular, where we're not buying voting stock, we're taking no control of them, they intend to continue to give their senior executives this year $70 billion in bonuses and salary. I'm boggled by that.
Have to pay. They'll have to pay in the end.
I sure hope so.
I'm a forecaster, and I will make this forecast in your next segment.
Okay, and you've always been right. I mean, it's amazing. Dr. Ravi Batra with us. We'll be right back. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Program where despair is not an option, and we remind you every day that hard times set the stage for good times. This too shall pass. We're talking with Dr. Ravi Batra. In fact, he really highlights that in his most recent book, The New Golden Age, The Coming Revolution Against Political Corruption and Economic Chaos, that posits what we can do and how we can move beyond the insanity of the economic times in the recent past, if I'm accurately characterizing your book, Ravi.
The title, in the end, is very optimistic. We are talking about a new golden age. And just as we ended in the previous segment, I said that these evil wrongdoers will have to pay, because this time there will be a revolution. They don't pay all the time, but this time there is going to be a revolution, and people will demand that that there should be accountability of all those who are responsible for the current chaos and the more intense chaos coming in the near future.
Yeah, now November 5th, the day after the election, is Guy Fawkes Day, but I assume you're talking about a political revolution, not a physical or a violent revolution.
Right, a political revolution, yeah. But these guys have passed laws in their favor, and this is how they got legally rich. So now laws will be passed to punish them.
Yeah.
Just because they did them in the past will not save them.
And there are some great organizations. Progressive Democrats of America, for example, is out there. They're, you know, on the ground, you know, helping Healthcare Not Welfare Canada, Debbie Cook's challenge to Dana Rohrabacher, for example, California's 46th district. It's just a whole bunch of really good campaigns. Go to pdamerica.org for more information on that. RaviBatra.com for Ravi's information. Ravi, let's take some more phone calls here. Donna in Detroit, you're on with Dr. Batra.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy your show very much. At the beginning of the hour, when Dr. Batra first came on, Tom, right before he came on, you had said, you know, you wanted to ask about if this is a good time for people to, you know, sell their silver and gold, you know, that they may have been acquiring for the last couple of years out of fears of what's been happening in the current markets. And I wasn't sure that that was quite answered. And I, for one, would be curious to know, to get some sort of guidance. I don't make a whole lot of money. That's really where I have my money tied up and any extra that I have. And listening to Progressive Radio for the last few years, and doing my own research, that seemed the way to go. So on my meager income, that's what I have in reserve, and I can't touch my 401k or anything like that, and my retirement's tied up until I leave the hospital. But in light of gold going down, is this the time to liquidate it?
Robbie?
Well, it's a very, very hard question to answer.
Particularly for somebody who owns physical gold.
Yeah, right. Just that I can only answer it by what I am doing. I think it's I'm going to buy some gold shares and sell call options on them, because even now these shares can fall, although they have fallen more than 60%. But I think looking at both sides, the return on options is very high. And so I will buy some shares and buy those options.
Right, but you have bought physical gold in the past.
I bought it at very low prices, because remember, I have been telling people to buy gold for a long time.
Yeah.
I bought it at when it was 300 or something.
Yeah.
So even now it's at 700. But if you bought it at a very high price, maybe it's time to cut back a little, sell a little of it, because I think most likely it will make a comeback, but again, you cannot depend totally on that
right.
Advice. I think right now the hedge funds are in panic and they are selling. Even central banks are selling gold,
yep,
because they need the money. But when the times are really bad, where can people turn to? So I personally will sell a little bit if you have a lot of physical amount. And then when the price is right, get into like ABX is the symbol for this gold share that I'm going to buy and sell options on.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be the strategy to do, because I think in bad times people, at least in the past, have turned to gold. And I'm sorry I'm not so clear-cut about my answer, but really I can't do anything better than this.
Yeah, well, none of us have a crystal ball.
Yeah.
And we're entering into economic times that in some ways really truly resemble the late 1920s, early 1930s, and yet at those times, there was no social safety net, there was no social security, there was no unemployment insurance, there was no Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or Federal Savings and Loan Insurance Corporation, there was no bank regulation, there was no Securities Exchange Commission, there was nothing. And when Democrats in Congress tried to put into place these things in 1930, 31, and 32, Herbert Hoover actually vetoed the legislation because he was a good Republican who believed that the free market would solve all problems. So we had to go through a brutal and grinding 3 years of depression before Roosevelt came into office and was actually able to change those things. Many of those institutions have been damaged severely by Republicans, by Phil Graham busting up Glass-Steagall Act, for example, and others.
Yeah.
But many of them still exist. So while this may be a 1930s scenario, there are some circuit breakers, aren't there? There is a safety net here.
I don't think it will be as bad as the 1930s, but it could be as bad as in the early 1980s.
Yeah.
Even that was horrendous. The only thing that is more worrisome now than in the past, was that at that time, the general population was not involved with the stock market. And this time, a lot of people, 50% of the people are through their 401k plans.
Right, because they've passed all these laws to encourage people to forget about the Social Security. This is all part of the Republican plan to take apart Social Security.
Yeah, they passed these laws so people will buy stocks, and then as stocks soar, the CEOs will get their stock options valued at a very high price and so on.
Right.
So this is all horrible. But they will have to pay because this time there will be a revolution.
From your lips to God's ears. I've said that twice today. Hopefully, I am frankly a tremendous optimist on this. I just think it's going to take us 2 or 3 years, Ravi.
But no longer than that.
But no longer than that. Dr. Ravi Batra, RaviBatra.com. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, just a quick update. Welcome back to the third hour of our program. By the way, police spokeswoman Diane Richard, this is the Pittsburgh Police Department, says investigators gave this 20-year-old woman who claims that she was attacked at a bank ATM and had a B carved in her face, presumably for Barack, because she had a McCain Palin bumper sticker on her car. And Drudge, by the way, was trying to spin this like she was a campaign worker who was attacked, as if, you know, she'd gone to somebody's house or something. I mean, the way that Drudge was spinning this thing was just, frankly, in my opinion, reprehensible. And Jeffrey Feldman, who's just a great observer of these issues, had a great post on this yesterday afternoon over at Huffington Post. But nonetheless, Pittsburgh police say they've checked the bank surveillance footage. She wasn't there. She wasn't attacked there. Now she's changed her story and said that she was attacked someplace else and she doesn't remember where it was. But she did drive from there to her friend's house rather than going to the police. She didn't realize that there was a bee on her face because she was unconscious, except that the bee is done backwards the way that you'd do it if you did it in a mirror. And this is the obverse of Tawana Brawley, and it's not going to be a good thing, frankly. Sarah Palin, was she a feminist or is she not? She's taken different positions on this. She inadvertently criticizes herself for supporting the Bridge to Nowhere, which she strongly supported, by the way. She condemned fruit fly research while saying that we need to fund research into autism, not realizing that the very fruit fly research that she was condemning was research that discovered an enzyme or a protein called Nurexin that is used for nerve cell connections to form and function correctly. The discovery, this from a study published by the University of California. This is after Sarah Palin made this, smart remark about how, we don't need to be funding no fruit fly research. Here she is.
Public dollars that we already have and are spending. This is a matter of reprioritizing. We've got a $3 trillion budget in this country, and Congress spends some $18 billion on earmarks for their political pet projects. And that right there is more than the shortfall to fully fund IDEA. Where does a lot of that earmark money end up anyway? You guys have heard some of the examples of where those dollars go. You've heard about the bridges, and you've heard about some of these pet projects that really don't make a whole lot of sense. And sometimes these dollars, they go to projects having little or nothing to do with the public good. Think like fruit fly research in Paris, France. I kid you not.
Yeah. So first of all, they go to things like the bridges, which she actually hired a lobbyist to go to Washington, D.C. and lobby for. Secondly, this from the article, this from the study that she just referenced. The discovery made in the Drosophila fruit flies may lead to advances in understanding autism spectrum disorders. As recently, human neurexins have been identified as a genetic risk factor for autism. The study on fruit flies will help us understand autism. In fact, they said it has revolutionized the study on birth defects and autism. So every time these people turn around, they shoot themselves in the foot. Andy Card comes out, and this is Bush's former chief of staff. Why was Sarah Palin selected? Well, because he wanted to introduce women to participation in the political process. Say what? This is Andy Card? Virgil Good, by the way, or Goody, is out there campaigning and talking about the real Virginia. It just is absolutely bizarre. Anything goes Friday. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Sean in Vancouver, Washington. Hey, Sean, what's up?
Hey, Tom, there's this poisonous conservative talking point going on around there, going on all over the radio and so forth. It's parroted by, like, Stephen Moore, Cato Institute, American Enterprise Institute. And I know you always stress the importance of framing issues and battling for narratives and that sort of thing. And it's the following. This whole concept that we can't tax the rich because it's the rich who pay 60% of all the income taxes and provide all the jobs. And you know, that just, it flies in the face of reality. You always like to quote that Abraham Lincoln line where labor comes first. And it also reminds me of Karl Marx. I mean, let's give credit where credit is due. The surplus value is created from the workers. I was wondering if you'd elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure, yeah. Marx's analysis in Das Kapital was correct. His prescription didn't work, but his analysis was correct. And you're right. You have the top 1% in America can earn as much wealth as the bottom 90%, control as much wealth as the bottom 90%, and they control and they get as much income as the bottom 50%, and so.
Well, isn't it?
They pay taxes at 30%, but they get income at 50%. They're doing just fine, thank you very much. And the bottom line is that without massive wealth, without Bill Gates style wealth, we would still have entrepreneurs in this country. We'd still have people of modest wealth. We'd still have people who are building factories. I mean, we did not see the emergence of dynastic families during the 40s, the 50s, during the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, or the 70s. It didn't happen until the top tax rate was dropped by Ronald Reagan.
What I like to always ask these people is, well, why did plantation owners own slaves? Why are companies against unions? Why is there such a temptation to hire undocumented workers? It's because the workers create the wealth, and then it's the capitalist that steals the wealth from the worker.
Right, and this was conventional wisdom. I mean, everybody in America understood this, Sean, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, but I'm telling you, ever since Reagan, the memes, the stories have been so changed that, and thank you for the call, have been so changed that people actually think that rich people create jobs. Well, the vast majority of small businesses in the United States were not started by rich people. They were started by people who decided to actually, the first business I started with my unemployment check. And I think, that's how people start businesses. They start them on a shoestring. You know, every business I've started, I've taken no income out of for the first couple of years. And then eventually, you're doing pretty good. You can take a paycheck or you can sell the thing off. But they're not started by the rich, A. And B, nobody ever says, oh, gee, I've got an extra $100,000 in tax cuts this year, so I think I'll go out and hire somebody. Give me a break. You hire somebody because they're going to do work that's going to produce more money for you than they cost. It's a very simple equation, period. If somebody can make $100,000 worth of cars in the course of a year and you can pay them $50,000 to make those cars, out of the leftover $50,000, you pay all the overhead for the company and you have a profit left over. That's how it works. And in fact, typically labor costs are somewhere around 4, 5, 6, 7% of the cost of the product. It varies from industry to industry, but most industries actually have a multiplier where you can calculate how much is appropriate to pay labor because you know what all the other costs are if you're going to make a profit. But it's all labor is producing the value. And people don't create jobs. The whole phrase create jobs is a lie. It's a misnomer. It's a stupidity. Anybody who uses the phrase create jobs is demonstrating that they are economically ignorant. Unless they're talking about government creating an environment in which there is more demand, and thus that demand will cause people to want to buy things, which will cause entrepreneurs and businesses to say, you know, we need to make more of this stuff. We need to hire more people. You could argue that that's the only way that jobs are created. Jobs are not created. Demand is created, and jobs are the response to that demand. It's just very, very straightforward. Stacy in Los Angeles, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Stacy.
Hey, Tom. Why do you hate America so much?
I love America, Stacy. I love this country.
Hey, I have a question for you. I have some extra money left over that I want to donate. I was going to send it to Elwin Tinklenburg, but I think he's okay now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm asking you for some key races that you think might be good. I can't remember the guy who's running against Gordon Smith in your state.
That would be Jeff Merkley here in Oregon, and that is a very tight race. And Jeff Merkley's a very, very good guy.
How do you spell his last name?
Merkley.
Okay. Anybody else that you can think of? Isn't the former mayor of or the current mayor of Anchorage the Democrat running for Senate in Alaska?
I believe so. I don't have those details in front of me. I'm sorry. Progressive Democrats of America have done a good job of this. You might want to go over to pdamerica.org and see what they're up to. Daily Kos has done a very good job of identifying close races almost every day, and you might have to go back a day or two in their archives. Almost every day they're identifying races where they're recommending that their members go toss $20, $50, whatever, you know, that way. These are all good ones. I'd like to put a plug in for a charity, the Salem Children's Village that my wife and I started back in 1978 in New Hampshire, SalemChildrensVillage.org. You know, if you got $10 to send their way, it would be appreciated.
You got it. Well, I'm happy. I think we're going to be able to say former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way, but nothing is a done deal.
I know that. You know. And then the other thing, my favorite thing in the world, is going to hear Bill O'Reilly choke when he has to say Senator Al Franken.
Yes, that will be a precious moment, won't it, Stacey?
Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thanks so much for the call, and thanks for listening to us there on K-Talk. 16 minutes past the hour. Anything Goes Friday here. Tom Hartman with you taking your calls. You can get our live streaming video. Go to TomHartman.com. There's a button right up at the top. You can find it.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Anything Goes Friday, 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, and our congratulations. I said this on the air a couple days ago, but it's really great to be able to say it in person. Yeah, she's a jolly good fella. Well, female. Janine Bonaparte with CodePinkAlert.org. Janine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tom.
Congratulations for trying to handcuff Karl Rove and perform a citizen's arrest. Tell us the story.
Oh, God. Briefly, this man had the audacity. Well, first of all, the Mortgage Bankers Association had the audacity to go ahead with their convention in San Francisco, my city. This on the heels of, you know, this god-awful suffering that people have incurred. And not only that, but to have paid this man $40,000 to Karl Rove, the greatest war criminal that living today, and I don't know that actually there were any before this generation, but it was just too much for me. I got the word, I think on Sunday, and within 48 hours, just had thrown this together. It was just, it, it was something, you know, when something feels right, there really is no other, there's no other consideration. There was no back and forth about it. It was just right here. So.
Did you have actual handcuffs?
Oh, I've had handcuffs for quite a while.
Okay. So you were actually going to try to handcuff him. Are you familiar with the laws regarding citizens' arrests? Do you know how much authority you had or didn't have?
I am indeed. And just for the record, this was not a stunt. I can tell you, Tom, this was not a stunt. You bet I was going to arrest him. And I had this cuff on my left hand secured, and I got it on his wrist, right wrist, just long enough for him to realize that he was possibly not, that smirk, you know, kind of evaporated for a split second, and oh my God, was that yummy to see that. So,
yeah. I saw him shake you off. He jerked his hand out of the way, sort of.
Oh, yes, he did. But, I mean, obviously, if I had it to do over again, I would do things differently, but having not done it before, and then
what would you do differently?
Oh, well, I mean, when I saw the video, I lost 15, 20 seconds in there. I could have moved faster.
But
it was really important to me to not be perceived as a physical threat, you know, somebody who needed to be shot.
Sure.
But also to be able to get close enough to get these things on him.
Yeah.
I just went at it. I wasn't sure how I was going to go.
So what are the laws regarding a citizen's arrest? I mean, do the rest of us, does it vary from state to state? Is it a federal thing? Is it, tell me about this. I mean,
we've all
heard about this all our lives.
The reality is, I mean, I think what I remember is, never mind, is a Gomer Pyle citizen's arrest, you know, that god-awful thing. But no, and it does vary state to state. And I intend to look at this further. For after the election, we can take on a nice campaign like Tough Carl, you know. And we have a long list of war criminals, believe me.
I mean, Karl Rove is actually in violation of a United States Senate subpoena, or both subpoenas from House and
Senate. Precisely what happened. I have sat in D.C. because I am part of, I mean, Code Pink, and also I've been working for over a year nonstop on impeachment. But I have watched him alone two times not respond, just simply not respond to a federal subpoena by the head of the House Judiciary Committee.
Right.
Now, how arrogant is that? It was just too much.
Well, it's not just arrogant. It's criminal. If you or I were to do that, they would have us
criminal.
In jail.
Precisely. But I know in California, there is a California Penal Code that makes it's very, very clear that I, you know, yes, I was absolutely within the limits of the law. Absolutely I was. Now, I did not manage to do it in the way that probably could have been the most, you know, efficient. But the main thing was, this was not something I had studied extensively. It was just too much. It was waving a red flag to have this man come into our town like this.
Yeah. We're talking with Janine Bonaparte, who is the Code Pink activist, codepinkalert.org, the website, who attempted on, what was it, the 22nd of October, the 21st
Tuesday.
Of October?
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday, to handcuff Karl Rove, who was paid $40,000 to give a speech at the San Francisco Mortgage Bankers Meeting, the National Mortgage Bankers Meeting in San Francisco. And she got so far as getting the cuffs halfway on his wrist. And I think it's just great. I envision a time in America where the criminals in this administration do not feel safe going anywhere without an armed limousine and a private plane, because not because they're afraid of violence, but because they're afraid of either A, simply the horrified stares of a revulsed citizenry, or B, they're afraid that somebody like you is going to put a handcuff on them and they're going to end up in the local Huskow facing a citizen's arrest for the crimes that they committed.
I'll take either one of those options.
Or both.
And you brought up a word that's becoming more and more dear to my heart, and it's a new revolution, you know. I mean, the fact that why wouldn't we take this on ourselves? I love it that we'll take it on ourselves. And maybe by doing so, now I've been frustrated beyond belief that the judiciary has not, mainly because of Nancy Pelosi, didn't act on impeachment. But perhaps the silver lining is that by virtue of the fact they have not, we have to, at least until we can embolden the next administration.
It took years to get Pinochet.
Beg your pardon?
Pinochet, the dictator down in Chile or Argentina.
Yes.
It was Chile, wasn't it? Who John McCain, by the way, went down and visited 3 weeks before Ted Kennedy went down there, and Ted Kennedy got basically ambushed, and McCain had secretly met with this guy and was very nice to him. But it took years to get Pinochet. It's probably going to take years to get all these guys, but I think their day is coming. Janine, I just wanted to say congratulations and thank you so much for your
efforts. Well, Tom, if I could just add a quick adjunct to that. The first thing we have to do is make sure that we don't have this election stolen on November 4th, so we have a good attorney general to help us.
That's right.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Welcome back, 34 minutes past the hour. Oh, my. So much going on in the world, so little time. I have a rant I want to share with you, and I think I'm just going to move it until Monday. In fact, maybe we can just blow open an hour and start it based on a riff that this crazy lady in Minnesota went off on. What is America? You know, what makes an American? What makes America different from every other nation in the world? I have been accused, many Americans have been accused of being American exceptionalists. In other words, suggesting that America is unique among nations. Is it possible that it's true? If so, what is it that makes America different from every other country in the world? And this is a topic that I think is a really important one, and I'm not going to go into a long rant about it now. I've got a board slammed with calls, a lot of people who want to get in and say something, and we don't have much time, but stick around next week. I think this is really a critical, critical issue. David in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, David, what's on your mind?
Well, Tom, I just was reviewing a little piece in Time magazine about the 58 recession in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever studied it. I know you were too young to...
I was 7 years old in 1958, that was the year that my dad finally got a good, solid, full-time job in a tool and die shop. Prior to that, he'd worked at Lansing Die Sinking, and he'd worked for Alcoa, and, you know, he'd been bouncing around. He sold encyclopedias door-to-door for World Book. I remember him coming home every afternoon. He sold Rexer vacuums door-to-door when I was six. I remember that, actually, that period in time quite well. I remember for an entire week we ate macaroni and cheese for dinner. Because
you sold Rexer vacuums?
Yeah, my dad sold Rexair vacuums door to door when I was 6 years old.
I sold Rexair vacuums in 1968.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go.
Well, that's a little. As long as you mentioned it, that's one of the weirdest sales paradigms of all. I don't know what happened with your father, but what happened to me out here? These salespeople in this office, the people that control the office, they would advertise. First of all, they advertised for an air cleaner. Not for a vacuum, for an air cleaner.
Right, because the thing had water in the bottom of it, and it ran all the air through the water. It really cleaned out the air nicely.
Right, and you would drop a little pine oil drops in there.
That's right, those little pearls.
Yep. This is weird.
Oh, it was a wonderful vacuum cleaner.
No, I understand, but do you know how they sold it? And this is, when you talk about the evil of capitalism, listen to this. They would advertise for salesmen, and they take you in on a Monday. And Monday through Thursday, you go through all this sales training, and you learn this pitch. And they'd explain that if you sold one vacuum, you got 60 points, and two vacuums, 120. So you got money, plus you got gifts, et cetera, et cetera. Then the main salespeople, four or five or six guys, would go out to supposedly monitor you as you practiced your sales pitch on your relatives, your aunts, your uncles, your mother, your father.
Right.
Okay? For your benefit, to make you a better salesman. Now,
sounds sort of like Amway, like multi-level marketing.
Well, but not just that. What would happen, it didn't happen to me because I didn't have any relatives that they could go out with.
Yeah.
But guys that went out and had a salesman with them, what would happen was the kid would start the pitch, and about five words into the pitch, the real salesman would step in and say, excuse me, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, I think what your cousin, your nephew here is trying to say is, The Rainbow by Rex Air, which is what it was called,
right,
does such and 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 such. Now, if you sign this contract right now, in other words, Tom,
The other person would get the credit for the sale. That must be why, because we didn't have a lot of relatives, and we didn't have any relatives in Lansing. Everybody was up in Newego, up in Grand Rapids area.
Right.
That must be why my dad only sold them for like, you know, a month or so. We had one. You know?
And they were good. They
yeah.
Black and Decker, 1.5 horsepower. I still remember the pitch from 40 years ago, for God's sake.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
how ingrained it was. But the fact was, the next Monday, you were told to bring in your practice vacuum, or your vacuum that you had for practicing,
right.
for cleaning, and they would let you know when to come back. Don't call us, we'll call you. And that's the way the Rex Air, based in Michigan. Are you aware of that?
I'm not surprised.
The company was based in Michigan.
Yeah, so Amway is based in Michigan,
right.
too, outside
right.
of Grand Rapids.
The
there's a lot of multi-level marketing stuff started in Michigan.
Anyway, with the 58 recession, number one,
yeah.
it was the first time that auto companies had to offer, well, they don't have to, they offered rebates on the cars to get people into their showrooms. It was noticeable. Because people said, oh, my God, what are they doing? That was the first year of cash rebates. Come on in, buy a Chevy, we'll give you $500 cash. Okay?
Interesting.
It bothered people, but it didn't bother them very much. Why? Because they knew that there was still industry in this country.
Right. We still made things here.
We still made
including Rex Airs, which was made in America.
Exactly. So who cared if there was a recession? It would be over eventually, and we would go back to doing what we always did.
Right.
Okay. Very quickly. Scene moves to 1973. I was working in Pasadena, California. A buddy of mine comes in. He's got these shirts in a bag. And I said, what are those? He says, I just bought them over on Colorado Boulevard, you know, where the Rosebury goes. And he says, they're $4.99. I said, what are you talking about? He says, they're made in China. I said, what do you mean made in China? Why would anybody have to go to China for shirts? Well, you've got Aero and Munsingwear and Van Heusen and all these things over here.
That are all made in America in 1978.
Nobody had heard of a Chinese shirt.
Yeah.
That was 35 very short years ago.
That's right.
There's your United
and that's
States
and that's
America.
The thing. I mean, you know, I try to tell these stories to my kids, and they look at me like, you know, you're an old man, aren't you, David? I got to move along, but
okay.
thanks for calling and thanks for the story. I mean, the bottom line is, we used to have a sustainable economy, and we don't. And it's going to take a hell of a lot of work to rebuild it. That's the bottom line. Donna in Nevada, California. Hey, Donna.
Hi. Thank you so much for your program, and thank you for the work you're doing. It's important for all of us out here. I'm a long way from where I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I live in Marin County, one of the wealthiest counties in this nation. If he had lived, he'd be 107 years old, my dad. And Daddy hit Chicago when he was 21 years old. Told me if you couldn't get a job in Chicago, Donnie, you couldn't get one anywhere. And Tom, what a program you have today. My husband, his dad was a tool and die maker on the South Side all his life. When I read the memoir by Barack Obama, Dreams of My Father, and I said, Ray, listen to this. This kid did advocacy work right down in Roseland or 113th in Michigan, right down in Elk Elk Gardens, around the corner.
That's where my dad grew up.
Oh, you
my dad grew up on the south side of Chicago.
Oh, good heavens. This is uncanny. Your whole program today is uncanny. I've never called you before. I only started listening to you in the spring through the recommendation of two very good neighbors of mine. Mm-hmm. I want to say this. If I had the ability, I would start taking for free Americans back to see the south side of Chicago where Ray still has relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Mine have moved to North Carolina and one left in Niles.
Yeah.
And take them to see a third world country. And when
what
I
has
went,
become a third world country? Because
oh,
when
a,
my grand
you,
when my
sir.
Grandfather and my grandmother moved there, it was partly a Norwegian ghetto, partly a Jewish ghetto, partly a you know a lot
you.
Of I mean, it wasn't a disaster area. It was an area of opportunity. My grandfather and his two brothers started Hartman Brothers Furniture. Oh. At that time, we spelled our name with only one N. They added the second N in the early 1940s or late 30s. So there's still records of the company. And my grandfather was a cabinet maker, and they went door to door and sold this stuff. He died a couple of years ago. He used to tell stories about, you know, being the kid who had to run down to the speakeasy that John Dillinger ran and buy a beer by the bucket and bring it back. And the guys would sit on the front porch and the stoop in the south side of Chicago and drink it. And
Tom, amazing. My father and those men, and us, the children and my grandchildren and soon to have great-grandchildren, are part of the people of that time, harkens back to Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, Dynamite Book, everybody who's a Republican would better read that one once a month.
Yeah.
Daddy was so proud to be Brotherhood of Locomotive.
Or Cannery Row by John Steinbeck is another great one of the Depression, another great book of the Depression.
Part of the baby country that grew fat fast. That's what we're about.
Yep.
That's what we're about,
that's
Tom.
Absolutely right. Donna, I have to move along about
that. Oh, bless you.
I just have a minute before the break. Thank you very much for the call. But yes, we need to bring our country back. We need to bring our country back. Joe in Pittsburgh, you got some news for us.
Hello?
Hey, Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, this is John.
Oh, John, I'm sorry.
Enjoy your show. Hey, the latest on the young lady from Texas A&M is she's being charged now.
She's being charged with a crime?
That she made up the story, and they're not sure how deep it goes.
Yeah.
And one other thing, the Republican or the right-wing talking heads last night, I surfed through the channels on Hannity and I think Savage, had a former assistant attorney general from Pennsylvania once again talking about the Barack Obama birth certificate.
Oh yeah,
and try to make a big thing out of it.
I know. I get a dozen emails a day about this thing, and it's a joke. I mean, it's a joke. His birth certificate is really was born in Hawaii. Nobody's disputing that. These are pathetic attempts to, in advance, delegitimize his presidency. So if he's elected and if he becomes president, and hopefully that's going to be the case, but we all have to get out there and not just vote, but make sure that five friends of yours who might have been, a little lazy get out and vote too. When he becomes president, they'll be able to say, well, he's not really an American. He's not really our president. He wasn't really elected. Acorn stole the election. This is all an attempt. This is the end game in advance.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to our executive producer, Sean Taylor, to Chris Rosen, Lauren Kirshner, and Marcus Hillman at Air America in New York, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, to every single radio station. If you're listening to a radio station, give them a call and tell them that you like the show and thank them for keeping us on the air and any kind of programming that you like. I mean, you don't need to limit it to me, but let our radio stations need to know that you're listening. And the sponsors need to know that you're listening and that you're going to buy their products or recommend them, particularly in these scary economic times. And thanks to you for listening to our program. And thanks to Ellen Ratner from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, for being with us every single day and giving us an update on what's going on in the world. Hey, Ellen.
Hey, it's Ellen Ratner, and there's quite a bit going on, actually, but slowly. A lot of behind-the-scenes things. One piece of good news, I suppose, if you can call it that, is that existing home sales for the last month have gone up 5.5%. However, the median house of a home has dropped 9.4%.
Which probably means that those home sales are actually auctions of foreclosed properties.
Right. So it depends, again, how you look at it.
Right.
The Senator Stevens jury has been sent home. Apparently, one of the jurors is like a little crazy, but the other juror's father died, so the judge said, you're going home.
Mm-hmm.
There has been some, the president today went out and he went to look at defense and get his advice from the National Security Agency. He absolutely said nothing about it. He also voted today, and the ballots are sent by mail. Dana Perino assured the press corps that he voted for McCain. I'm not surprised.
Tell everybody that.
Now
George Bush and Dick Cheney voted for McCain. They're endorsing McCain. That's
shocking.
Well, you know, I think we need to remind people that McCain's a Republican.
Right.
And that he wants to perpetuate the economic policies of George Bush and Ronald Reagan, which have destroyed this country.
To say the least. Big financial news today is the U.S. Treasury is considering taking equity stakes in insurance companies. And that could drain a lot of that $700 billion.
There is, this is incredible. On top of this, I have this story that I pulled out of the paper. This is from last Saturday. It's not just homeowners who are having trouble paying bills. There are 93 U.S. companies at risk of defaulting on $53 billion in debt, marking a 50% jump since last June when the credit crisis started. This was in the Boston Globe. $53 billion in debt. This is corporations that have issued bonds. And, there are all these landmines all around us, and I'm thinking that 90% of them have not yet exploded.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. I really think that it's going to get really bad next year.
The RNC and the McCain campaign, the only thing they put out today was a warm and fuzzy on Sarah Palin. And then the RNC is putting out top talking points about how Obama joined this crazy communist new socialist new party. Well, as you know, I think I even joined the new party at one point. I mean, give me a break. It's not socialist.
But we all know you're a commie, Ellen.
Right. And then also, they have been going on Obama's connections to MoveOn.org and Acorn. The RNC put out one. The McCain campaign put out the second. Where have there been their comments and their plan for the economic plan? They don't have one, and they're not putting it out. I mean, whoever's running their campaign has got to have the brain the size of a pea.
Yeah. Well said. Well said.
I mean, I just can't imagine. How do you not go with your strengths?
You're talking about the McCain campaign?
I'm just thinking about the McCain campaign.
What are their strengths?
Well, I mean, some of the McCain's strengths is that, you know, he can say, I've been around through all of this and I can give you advice. I mean, whatever. But his strengths certainly are not, I don't think his strengths are anything compared to Obama. Don't misunderstand me. But play to at least something on his quote-unquote experience.
Well, they've tried doing that, and that's one of the things that I think is hurting them, is because people don't want that kind of experience. People are horrified by that experience, you know?
Well, the fact is, they certainly, other than getting out the evangelical right-wing voter, the middle voter is not going to, if they're undecided, even if they don't like Obama, are not going to get out of the house because somebody thinks and vote for McCain because they think that Obama's a socialist. And most of the undecided voters are not going to vote that way either at this point because they're scared about their pocketbook.
Yeah, yeah. It's true. It's true. So, Ellen, there are so many commentators and so many people who are saying, you know, Obama is so far ahead in the polls. And then there's this one outlier poll that accurately predicted the theft of the election in Ohio that shows that it's neck and neck and there's a chance that McCain could pull it out. And that's the one, of course, all the conservatives are trumpeting. But it does.
Well, I've got to tell you, at some point you should try and get Doug Kelly on, who's the executive director of the Ohio Democratic Party.
Right.
They can try anything they want. It is not going to happen in the great state of Ohio.
They're not going to steal it this year.
They're not. And that was Mr. Kelly,
Brunner.
I went to high school with, who's the lieutenant governor, and of course the governor. It's just not going to, and now they have a Democratic Secretary of State. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. So
try, but it's not going to happen.
Right. So you're not so concerned that, obviously we need to get everybody out to vote.
Everybody needs to get out to vote, but this is not run. What was the guy's name? Was Mr. Blackwell?
Yeah. Ken Blackwell.
Not going to happen under him.
Yeah. Okay, good. Ellen Ratner.
Blackwell's gone, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Ellen Ratner, talkradionews.com. Thank you so much, Ellen.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. On Monday, I'm going to be debating Brad O'Leary, the president of ATI News, about the Employee Free Choice Act and what he calls a Democrat acorn in the side. What? Plus, Carrie Lucas, the Independent Women's Forum, who says bigger government won't help women. And, of course, the best of the rest of the news and your calls. Have a great weekend. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Get out there. Get active. Tag. You're it. We'll see you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.